information is free.
The law? Of course.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border on shows.
The law? Of course.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
For the first time in all of human history, mankind is politically awakened. Wake up and welcome, my friends, to episode 171 of Media Monarchy. It's May 21st, 2010, and my name is James Evan Pilato, and I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, class warfare, anti-DC candidates, and elite meets, a massive news purge, national-level terror drills, and tattle on the cattle, Gulf Oil, God's Work, Ground Zero, and the murder of Terrence Yakey. All that and so much more is here, May 21st, 2010, episode 171 of MediaMonarchy.com. Fall Hard from the Stockholm, Sweden band known as the Shout Out Louds. That's the second cut off their brand new record, Work. And I ran away from work Sunday night so I could go check the Shout Out Louds live here in Portland, Oregon at the Doug Fir Lounge. Super tight, had a good time. It can't all be politics and conspiracies and cover-ups now, can it, my friends? And I welcome you, new returning listeners, wherever you are in the world, however you may be listening or re-listening to Media Monarchy, I welcome you with open arms. We're nonpartisan here. We're all about data mining and going through the available open source intelligence and giving you news that matters, laying out the path for you to hopefully go do more research on your own. Be your own leader. Don't take what I'm saying. Go check it out. And I'm not right about everything, but again, we're all hopefully trying to become more politically awakened. So again, my friends, my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. This is episode 171. It's May 21st, 2010, and we are broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Simulcast, and huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, blasting out worldwide live. As well, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming. ReveRadio.net, the worldwide home of free speech, broadcasting live. And again, huge thanks to our latest live affiliate, LaughlinRadio.com. Broadcasting MediaMonarchy.com live at Pacific time there as well, just after 10 AM again on this May 21st. And the other list of affiliates who rebroadcast Media Monarchy, like on early Saturday mornings, 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, thanks to frolympia.org, Free Radio Olympia. A few more words about them in just a few moments. 104.1 FM, Berkeley, liberationradio.net, oneskyradio.com on 90.7 FM in Kisilov, Alaska. phantomradio.org, stickam.com/groundzeroradio, cascadiapublicradio.org, radio23.org. And again, huge thanks to all of those. I should also mention radio23.org makes available the high-quality subscription feed of Media Monarchy podcasts suitable for rebroadcast on your internet community pirate radio media outlet of choice. And I ask you, of course, to make contact with me, like on the beleaguered Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube. Of course, we're now a few weeks in to streaming live video from ustream.tv/Media Monarchy. Just another way, another tool, another outreach in the information war. Send me an email, mediamonarchy@yahoo.com or at Gmail. And we're on Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, radioforall.net, archive.org, all that, so much more, growing by the days and weeks. And again, these are just tools. Tools that hopefully have ideas and expressions and passions behind them. The web was always just a plaything to me before I started to do the Media Monarchy website and then the radio show, and it gave such a real use and an outlet and a passion and a research tool and an outreach tool. Now, we always like to glance at Google News just to see what's going on. Again, as we're coming to you live, May 21st, California employers keep adding jobs. Obama mandates rules to raise fuel standards. And financial stocks turn higher after Senate passes reform bill. You can call it reform if you want. Ron Paul defending Rand Paul. Of course, we're going to get into that in just a little bit. Another Massey miner dies in West Virginia, and it's Pac-Man and Empire Strikes Back 30th birthday. But having said all that, and having gone through all the ways, all the outreach, I'll throw one last mention out before we get to it. We're also in the chat room over on ZeroPointRadio.com. I'm in there right now, just like I'm signed into Instant Messenger and Skype. I think I've said it before to them, but I'll say it out to everybody. I appreciate having basically a ground control, if you will. Now, I always love radio because it's always kind of been a solitary thing for me. You can go in your booth and do your art and do your communication. But as this show has grown and branched out and literally spreads all around the world, which blows my mind, I hardly see anybody from the Portland Radio Authority. Never met anybody from Revere or any mini or the other stations. But it's nice having those guys at ZeroPointRadio.com as the ground control that, again, helps bring all this information and helps spread it all around the world. More about ZeroPointRadio.com and an exciting live event from a man, Clyde Lewis, of GroundZeroMedia.org, coming up at the end of this episode 171. But let's get into it. The top of MediaMonarchy.com for you right now is the triumphant return of The New World next week. The video series brought to you by myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, giving you the weekly rundown on the stories that matter, laying out the text, and hopefully giving you the context and the subtext. And the three stories we hit this week, after a little bit of hiatus, we're going to hit these all in order. Class warfare, hundreds protest outside banksters' houses in D.C., voters back anti-D.C., anti-establishment candidates, and where elites meet, CFR, Trilateral, Bilderberg, G20, and more. All that and so much more is what we go over in the latest New World Next Week episode. Primarily on YouTube, again, if you subscribe to the feeds, you'll get it all served out to whatever you need, however you need, and we're working on branching it out to some other video platforms, working on that behind the scenes, but again, so many things all coming down the pipe. And again, huge thanks to everybody who helps make this happen. I got to meet a couple of the fine folks from Free Radio Olympia Saturday. They were making a trek down to do a couple of interviews where they talked to author, researcher, and radio host Tracy Twyman. And then a couple days later, I did an interview with Tracy Twyman. It's now up. TracyTwyman.com, published late last night. I believe I'll try and serve it out to you this weekend through my feeds, where we primarily talked about foodworldorder.com, one of my sister sites in the media monarchy kingdom, and the attacks through the food and the overarching eugenics agenda and how it's being laid out, how it's being rolled out, how it's being dumped down our collective gullets. So, again, thanks to Tracy Twyman. Thanks to the folks from FreeRadioOlympia.org and their interview with me. Again, when that's available, I'll send it back around to you. And we'll all keep sharing all of this. So, the three stories that we go over on the latest New World Next Week. And again, I'll tell you,
that we've been recording and streaming live video on ustream.tv/MediaMonarchy. It's experimental. I'm setting it all up myself. There's little razzle-dazzle. But again, just another way to spread it out there. The New World Next Week videos, however, are quite well produced, well put together. You can show them to your most skeptical aunt or brother or whomever. I think they are probably the most effective info tool that I'm involved with. And again, huge thanks to CorbettReport.com and thanks to all of you guys who helped get this information out. So, digressions all aside, let's take it off from the Huffington Post, where they call it class warfare. Hundreds protest outside banksters' houses in D.C. Huge raucous crowds converged outside bank employees' houses last Sunday afternoon to demand banks stop lobbying against Wall Street reform. Oh, we've gotten some reform now. Bank of America, bad for America, shouted community leaders outside the House of Bank of America Deputy General Counsel Gregory Baer, B-A-E-R, and we'll note, I believe, comedian Doug Benson in talking about Bank of America. And, of course, their initials, B of A, B very of A. Continuing, the Chicago-based grassroots organization National People's Action, in coordination with the SEIU, bust in more than 700 workers from 20 states into Bear's neighborhood, one of the wealthiest corners of Washington. The action kicked off several days of protests targeting K Street for lobbyist roles in financial reform. Bear himself went unnoticed until a neighbor outed him. The mob booed loudly as he walked into his house. "I don't have time for you," he said, according to Trinda Kennedy of Springfield, Illinois, who used a bullhorn to tell the crowd about her trouble getting a mortgage modification from Bayer's bank. Passersby and dog walkers smiled at the sight of people gathered all over Bayer's lawn and blocking the road. Bayer's neighbor from across the street won little sympathy when he angrily yelled at protesters for waking up his 2-year-old daughter. Kennedy, the aforementioned Trinda Kennedy, was one of several people who used a bullhorn to tell personal bank horror stories. Bayer, formerly a senior official at the Treasury Department, is a lawyer for the bank's regulator and public policy legal group. Just another example of the revolving door between government appointee positions, generally unelected appointee positions, regardless of which phony progressive or fake conservative party, back and forth. From the bank to the Treasury to the Federal Reserve to Goldman Sachs. From Halliburton to Vice President. The families, again, multi-generational serial killers. The societies, the families, the bloodlines, the roundtables, the think tanks. All those. And what we're getting to, I think, in a way, is essentially the story of, if not just American history, then a lot of world history. It's the banksters versus the people. And they throw us the social football issues that we'll tug of war over, whether that's abortion or gay marriage or immigration or whatever it's going to be. Ultimately, those are things that the power elite and the oligarchs and the eugenicists don't give a damn about. They maybe threaten you with taking away something like abortion or lots of medical treatments. But again, that's all a part of the agenda. We'll touch more on that a little bit later, as of course, we've got references and updates from the fine eugenicists such as Bill Gates and Ted Turner. But let's run down the list real quick of other related econocrash updates under this class warfare posting. Dow theorist Richard Russell says, "Sell everything. You won't recognize America by the end of the year." This story from BusinessInsider.com got a lot of traction. And again, unfortunately, stories that are gloom and doom do get a lot of traction. We do need more positive, result, progressive-driven ideas. And quickly down the list, Detroit to demolish 10,000 abandoned properties. Great articles from the Economic Collapse blog, The Extreme Frustration of Unemployed Americans, The Declining Value of Work, and 11 Signs the U.S. Government Has Become an Overgrown Monstrosity That Almost Every American Is Dependent Upon for Economic Survival. Sell everything, you won't recognize America by the end of the year. Could this really be what we're facing? Almost half of U.S. households get government benefits. That's from AllGov. And again, that stigma rapidly disappearing. As again, I think a lot of folks now trying on other folks' shoes. But let's hit the link to this story from Bloomberg. Not only did the headline catch my attention, but of course, even reading the first paragraph caught even more of my attention. State finances rigged in conspiracy by banks' advisors. A telephone call between a financial advisor in Beverly Hills and a trader in New York was all it took to fleece taxpayers on a water and sewer financing deal in West Virginia. The secret conversation was part of a conspiracy stretching across the U.S. by Wall Street banks in the $2.8 trillion municipal bond market. The call came less than 2 hours before the bids were due for contracts to manage $90 million raised with the sale of West Virginia bonds. On one end of the line was Stephen Goldberg, a trader with Financial Security Assurance Holdings Limited. On the other was Zevi Walmark. Of advisory firm CDR Financial Products, Inc., Goldberg arranged to pay a kickback to CDR to land the deal, according to government records filed in connection with a DOJ indictment of CDR and Walmart. West Virginia was just one stop in a nationwide conspiracy in which financial advisors to municipalities colluded with Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Lehman Brothers, Wachovia, and 11 other banks. Long-time listeners know I'm born and raised Southern West Virginia boy. Lived there the first 28 years of my life, and I've only lived the last five here in Portland, Oregon. Of course, there's lots of things I hated about the state and still do, and things that made me want to run away to a city. But I think I became a little more of a fierce defender of West Virginia since I moved to Oregon, because a lot of times when you mention to someone, they say, oh, Richmond? I have family in Virginia. They don't even register that West Virginia is its own state. And of course, you always have to say, it's like, no, we broke off from Virginia. We went with the North. I know you consider us South, but you don't know what you're talking about. I know every time you hear West Virginia, you go, ding, 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 ding. But if you knew what you're talking about, you'd know that the film Deliverance is actually set in Georgia. But I digress. Last few economics notes. Germany bans naked CDS against Eurozone government bonds. CDS, of course, standing for credit default swaps. This is the latest from Webster Tarpley on tarpley.net. Germany and Europe have now made some promising initial steps in the direction of their necessary self-defense against the depredations of these zombie banks and hedge fund hyenas who have been organizing a massive speculative attack on Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Italy with a view to destabilizing the euro and perpetuating the world hegemony of the troubled U.S. dollar. Now, as we had looked at Google News a little bit earlier, we saw that in the States here, stocks are up because of the financial reform bill, supposedly. Meanwhile, across the pond, things not going so well. Michelle Chosedowski, the excellent researcher, writer on globalresearch.ca, has a new book called Global Economic Crisis, The Great Depression of the 21st Century. Again, more on that from Global Research. And our last note does come with a quick little 7-second video and even a little bit of a longer video that you'll have to check out for yourself. Ottawa bank torched, but we must ask the question, direct action or false flag. Violence is the thing that lets the man crack down on all of us. Am I saying all anarchists are working for the feds? No. But I'm saying it's very easy to throw on a ski mask and bust in some windows and set off some firebombs and demonize a whole ideology and movement and whatever growth and momentum it might be getting. And time and time and time and time and time again, we've caught in observant folks and wide awake citizen journalists and activists and peace activists, not just anti-war, but pro-peace, have busted feds in Montebello, in Genoa, and all around the world, posing as anarchists, inciting violence, slipping back into the crowd, back to their police buddies. And then when Grandma and Grandpa see the news, they just see the window smash and the cops cracking down, cracking skulls. Be the change you want to see in the world. Going violent is the surest way to end all of this. All of this. Now, the second story we went over on the latest New World Next Week. Voters back anti-DC, anti-establishment candidates. That is the headline from the Associated Press, but we add the caveat in the addendum at first, hope, change, or more of the same. With the electorate's intense anger reverberating across the country, this is all but certain. It's an anti-Washington, anti-establishment year, and candidates with ties to either better beware. Any doubt about just how toxic the political environment is for congressional incumbents and candidates handpicked by national GOP and Dem leaders disappeared late Tuesday when voters fired Democratic Senator Arlen Single Bullet Specter in Pennsylvania, forced Democratic Senator Blanche Lincoln into a runoff in Arkansas, and chose Tea Party darling Rand Paul to be the GOP nominee in Kentucky's Senate race. People just aren't very happy, Ira Robbins, 61 years old, said in Allentown, PA, and the Associated Press retorts, with anyone linked to power, it seems.
It's the end of a political era here in Pennsylvania, as five-term incumbent Senator Arlen Specter has been defeated by Congressman Joe Sestak in a Democratic Senate primary. Specter had watched a 20-point lead evaporate in the past few weeks, and he got a little emotional as he congratulated Sestak.
Tell him that I think it is vital that we keep this seat to the Democratic Party, and that I will support him in the election.
Thank you, Pennsylvania!
Sestak had hammered away at Specter for weeks, claiming he had switched parties to try to save his job.
But it should come as no surprise to anyone that people want to change.
In the other closely watched race here in Pennsylvania, Democrat Mark Critz held on to the seat his late boss John Murtha had held for 36 years. The race was viewed as a possible indicator of what the November congressional races might be like. In Kentucky, Tea Party favorite and political newcomer Rand Paul defeated Secretary of State Trey Grayson, who had the backing of the GOP establishment, this for the Republican Senate nomination.
I have a message from the Tea Party, a message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our government back.
And in another race involving a Senate incumbent, Arkansas Senator Blanche Lincoln failed to get 50% of the vote in her race against Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter. They will compete in a runoff next month. Specter is the third congressional incumbent to be turned out by voters in the past couple of weeks. And the result here is also a defeat for President Barack Obama, who supported Specter and asked Sestak to abandon the race. Jerry Bodlander, The Associated Press, Philadelphia.
Now we can grab some of the updates from, like I said, the top of Google News right now on the sidebar. Ron Paul defends son Rand Paul's political tap dance. That's from Examiner.com. But let's hit briefly a somewhat overly optimistic article from Paul Joseph Watson. The establishment is in full-blown panic over Rand Paul. The establishment in full-blown panic over the runaway success of Kentucky primary winner Rand Paul and has set about attacking the son of Congressman Ron Paul from every conceivable angle in an attempt to undermine his support base and ensure his defeat by a Democratic opponent in November. Whatever your personal agreements or disagreements with the nuances of Rand Paul's policies, the fact is that he represents the rarest breed of politician, one not controlled by special interests, and that is a fundamental threat to the status quo and the gravy train for the crooks and scoundrels in the District of Criminals. Now they go on to run through the New York Daily News, bashing, and of course, The Guardian, and more and more. And again, what we discuss on The New World next week is what I just said a few minutes ago, and that's be your own leader. I think ultimately I do agree with that, that anyone new, anyone with less connections to the oligarchs is a good thing. Am I shouting it from the rooftops that Ron Paul's son won the primary? No, because it's not that simple. And his policies aren't as similar as we may like to believe they are. From what I can gather, Rand Paul believes in the phony war of terror. So he's for small government on the one hand, but how's that possible if you're for the military-industrial complex and the global war of terror? You tell me. And again, this is the primaries, and there's going to be a lot of political hoo-ha. And also, Rand Paul is still under the GOP. He's aligned with the Tea Party, which again, as we've noted time and time again, has now been another misdirected, infiltrated, run-into-the-ground group and name and meme. It started from essentially the libertarian Ron Paul Campaign for Liberty, anti-Federal Reserve, pro-personal responsibility, pro-personal liberties, no foreign wars of terror. And what we'll always throw in and what we'll always stand behind here is a prominent 9/11 truth standpoint. That 9/11 truth is inherently anti-war, that again, the official conspiracy theory of 9/11 is the blank check that keeps everything going to this day, nearly 9 years later. So we had mobs of people outside banksters' homes, which again, in a way, is a seemingly positive thing, but again, the violence is a specter that kind of haunts and hangs around. It has to be, I believe it has to be nonviolent. It's got to be monkey wrenching the New World Order. Culture jamming and pranks and an information war. I believe years ago, indie media even called it camcorder truth jihad before we had all of our webcams and pocket computers and all of that. The idea of just tape everything. Tape all your public officials. So we have the mobs of people. We have incumbents being thrown at. And again, I didn't even really mention single bullet specter. Getting bounced. That's a positive thing. Created the single bullet theory, again, of the official conspiracy theory of the assassination of JFK. Believe we even learned a few weeks ago on Media Monarchy that he was connected to Ira Einhorn, the unicorn killer. And that was just another fantastic discovery that, again, I found things within Peter Lavenda's Sinister Forces book. Surprise, surprise. So, again, these are all kind of massive things that we just have to kind of brush by. So those are positive things. But in the end, it's now time for all our favorite misleaders and banksters and gangsters and frontmen and oligarchs, for them all to get together. Lots of their secret meetings coming soon, where, of course, they'll have already taken a lot of their talking points from higher up. This is where they start to disseminate what's going to happen and what's going to unfold and what policies need to be put into place to control the population. Where Elites Meet is the name of the post on MediaMonarchy.com. CFR, Trilateral, Bilderberg, G20, and more. First from EconomicPolicyJournal.com. Geithner briefs superpower elites. The heavyweights want a report from the Treasury Secretary, including David Rockefeller and Lynn Forrester de Rothschild. Forrester was introduced to soon-be husband Sir Evelyn de Rothschild by Henry Kissinger at the 1998 Bilderberg Group Conference in Scotland, and they spent their honeymoon at the White House. That's a sidebar mention. In addition to Rockefeller and Lady de Rothschild on Friday afternoon, Geithner also met with other members of the board of directors of the Peter G. Peterson Institute for International Economics to discuss the administration's agenda for economic growth and strengthening the global financial system. You can hit the link to IIE.com for the International Institute of Economics and read more links and learn more about Pete Peterson, Huffington Post, Sky News, Wikipedia. But all you have to do is roll down the list and you'll see all your favorite characters from the Council on Foreign Relations. Of course, Pete Peterson was former president of the CFR. And there's all the folks from the World Bank and the IMF and Citibank and the banksters and IBM and Volcker. And where we get our quote from the beginning of this episode 171, from the grand chessboard writer himself, Carter's national security advisor, and now chief behind-the-scenes advisor to the Obama-saya. If you can see the comparisons there. Again from Paul Joseph Watson, Zbigniew Brzezinski decries global political awakening during his recent CFR speech. At a recent Council on Foreign Relations speech in Montreal, co-founder with David Rockefeller of the Trilateral Commission and regular Bilderberg attendees, Zbigniew Brzezinski warned that a global political awakening in combination with infighting amongst the elite was threatening to derail the move towards a one-world government. Brzezinski explained that global political leadership had become much more diversified, unlike what it was until relatively recently, noting the rise of China as a geopolitical power, and that global leadership in the context of the G20 was lacking internal unity with many of its members in bilateral antagonisms. In other words, the global elite is infighting amongst itself, and this is hampering efforts to rescue the agenda for global government, which seems to be failing on almost every front.
The other major change in international affairs is that for the first time in all of human history, mankind is politically awakened. That's a total new reality. Total new reality. It has not been so for most of human history until the last 100 years. And in the course of the last 100 years, the whole world has become politically awakened. And no matter where you go, politics is a matter of social engagement, and most people know what is generally going on in the world, and are consciously aware of global iniquities, inequalities, lack of respect, exploitation. Mankind is now politically awakened and stirring. The combination of the two, a diversified global leadership, politically awakened masses, makes a much more difficult context for any major power, including, currently, the leading world power, the United States.
I really enjoyed your presentation, but I'm wondering, how would you rate the United Nations and helping solve some of the geopolitical problems we've had? Some people say they're not adding a lot of solutions, and some people even suggest we should have another organization internationally that can do the job that the United Nations should be doing. And even people are talking about one world government. So, I mean, how do you view the UN right now?
Well, you know, there should be such an organization. The word should implies that there is a kind of moral imperative or need for it.
Oh, is that all? Moral imperative for a one world government. I really liked your speech about a one world government. Do you think the UN is that going to be the one world government, or do we need something new? if we look back at all the writings of all the bloodlines and eugenicists and multi-generational serial killers, whether it's Albert Pike or H.G. Wells, there was talk of there would be three world wars and there would be three attempts to set up a one-world government. The third, of course, would be the successful one. We had the unsuccessful League of Nations. We have the unsuccessful United Nations. You know, much like vampires, they have to be invited in. And I think part of the agenda is that they want to drag things down so far in that we'll be begging them. And I think Kissinger even said that pretty explicitly. Something to the effect of, you know, people today will yell against, you know, the New World Order, one world government. But tomorrow they'll beg for it. So, if we wrap up all three of those stories that, again, are covered on the most recent episode of The New World Next Week on youtube.com/Corbett Report, we would wonder if perhaps the banksters and elites are losing their grip. So, more on this from CorbettReport.com. Interviews with Charlie Skelton, as well as Dave Derby and Neil Foster of Sovereign Independent, confronting Rockefeller at the Dublin Trilateral venue. Charlie Skelton making his plans for the upcoming Bilderberg meeting. We, of course, are going to have the Bohemian Grove meeting very soon. My neighbor to the south in the Redwoods there. Remember, that's what Richard Nixon called the most faggy goddamn thing you could imagine. Take it from him, I guess. He was there. I'd like to think that these are positive developments. Again, with caveats. Caveats based on all of these things, again. You just have to kind of take a deep breath sometimes to go through all this and to continue going through all this and to keep your thoughts straight about any of it. But what we need to do, now, my friends, is knock it up a notch. While we go through the massive May 20th news purge, Fall Hard, of course named for our opening track from the Shout Out Louds, we're going to run down an ugly list of headlines. Brace yourself. One bit of 9/11 updates by way of Russia Today, that of course over the last several months now we've noted that Russia Today being an amazing outlet for formerly fringe conspiracy theorists. From cover-up to shakedown, 9/11 continues to haunt Americans. The leading authors of the 9/11 Commission report are pushing for more security measures, including a national ID card, with biometrics, of course. But given the history of the investigation, should Americans ask more questions first? Of course we should. We know that they were set up to fail. Keene and Hamilton admitted it. Stonewalled by the Pentagon, by the intelligence agencies. And all the other stories, William Rodriguez, Building 7, destroying the crime scene, the insider trading, the drills, the identification, the whistleblowing of Richard Grove, Indira Singh, J. Michael Springman, Colleen Rowley, all those folks, again, 9/11 is the blank check that lets them do everything. But we vote some bums in and we vote some bums out. One side goes to sleep, the other side becomes politically awakened. And the two-party phony left-right paradigm rolls on. Feds to imprison pot smokers for impaired driving. The feds have unleashed their new national drug control strategy. And you can download the PDF. I think it's 4 megs for you from WhiteHouseDrugPolicy.gov, wherein it basically seems to allude that if you smoked a joint last week and got in your car this morning, you may be driving impaired. Again, this all coming from the administration, from the federal level, who said they were gonna lay off on the marijuana busts. In all these examples, and so many more, try not to listen to what they say. Watch what they do. That's the thing. We hear what they say, and that's the stuff that gets trumpeted from the rooftops. But then we don't follow up and see what they do. Like the current front man, fakes left and moves way right. Another state. Will medical marijuana be legalized in Nebraska? More on that from News Junkie Post. Now, to get into our geopolitics updates, we have a story that I probably coulda, shoulda just put up as its own posting on MediaMonarchy.com. And we're going to get this from Wikinews that sources back to the BBC as well as the Associated Press. Investigation into Polish air crash reveals passengers in cockpit. The investigation into the plane crash that killed Polish President Lech Kaczynski has revealed that passengers were in the cockpit of the crashed plane. According to the head technical commission involved with investigating the crash, Alexei Morozov, the crew of the aircraft had been warned of limited visibility, although it has not been determined whether or not the crew's decision to land had been influenced by the passengers on board. The cause of the crash has not yet been identified, although the possibility of an explosion or a terrorist attack on board the aircraft has been ruled out. Morozov also said that the crew on board the plane had not been properly trained for the flight and had been assembled only a few days before the flight. He said the crew didn't undergo regular simulated training, including the practice of coordination and emergency situations during flights. The overall leader of the investigation, Tatiana Anadina, confirmed that unauthorized people had been in the cockpit near the end of the flight, saying that, quote, in the cockpit there were individuals who were not members of the crew. One person had been identified, although their name has not yet been released. Anadina said that the voice of one of them has been identified exactly. The voice of the other or the others will require additional information from the Polish side. The investigation also found that the aircraft involved had been in normal operating condition, and Adina said that, quote, the engines were working up until the moment the plane collided with the ground. The Polish president speaks out against the international gangster banksters and its regime change by plane crash. Was it Niall Ferguson as well, who almost died in a plane crash? What this reminds me of is, and again, hopefully we're going to find more out about this. Hopefully these names are going to leak out. This brings to mind the documentary The Assassination of JFK Jr. by John Hankey that goes into the possible, probable likelihood of a rogue agent placed within the cockpit. Further down the geopolitical list, my friends, the military slaughter of Thai red shirts intensifies.
The skies are scanned for signs of trouble. The red shirts are wary of the government helicopters circling overhead, and the tower blocks could be hiding army snipers. This constant surveillance is an indication of the fear and mistrust that exists between both sides. The government has set up an officially designated live firing zone and called in extra troops. But the protesters knew that already. A number have been killed in some of the bloodiest days of this month-long crisis. A and the British Embassy is warning of intense violence over the coming days.
They want to arrest our leaders. They accuse us of being terrorists. We have only come to demand democracy, but in their eyes we have become terrorists.
The heart of the protest movement is camped at this intersection. The surrounding area is the central shopping district, but for weeks now it's been empty of the usual crowds. The protest has also affected Bangkok's financial district. Explosions and troops here means the city's banks are closed and its financial services have ground to a halt. The army is trying to close in on the protesters, attempting to squeeze them into a smaller and smaller area.
So essentially all around the world we can see that the oligarchs and their enforcement armies in the guise of national militaries all around the world cracking down on people. Again, is this some kind of building endgame? Is this all a powder keg? Are they all trying to let us believe that 2012 is the ultimate goal of a lot of this? Or the apex, that's the point, that we're only going to escalate till then. I think they'd like for us to believe that. As again, the overall agenda of all these things, order out of chaos. They create the chaos so that we'll beg for the order that they're just waiting to provide us because they've already written it down. They just need the political capital and to wave the bloody shirt to make it happen. Another note on the Thai military slaughter from Copycat Effect. The Thai Braveheart Sedong assassinated at Triple Overpass. And again, this was one of the leaders of the Red Shirts assassinated. Originally reported he was just wounded, shot in the head, assassinated. Twilight Language, Copycat Effect going into location, location, location. Blowing down the rest of the geopolitical updates, Greece may take legal steps against U.S. for bank crisis. More on that from Bloomberg. And from The Telegraph, Gerald Warner writing that the EU is as doomed as its currency. Let's all get out from under this collapsing monstrosity. And I think that's what folks all around the world are saying, under their own collective monstrosities. Former presidential candidate missing in Mexico. 2010 Korea safe exercise. Meanwhile, South Korea to blame North for torpedoing warship. That story is still bubbling and playing out. U.S. persuades Security Council to impose new Iran sanctions. Israel plays war game, assuming Iran has nuclear bomb. And lastly, by way of Dot Connector UK and coming from Russia today, it's Finkelstein on Chomsky and Israel.
Over the weekend, linguist, academic, and activist Noam Chomsky was barred from entering Israel. Now, Chomsky is Jewish himself and even spent time in the 1950s living on a kibbutz in Israel, but he's now a critic of Israeli policy. Joining me from New York is author and critic of Israel as well, Norman Finkelstein, who was also denied entry to the Jewish state in 2008. He's going to give us some insight. Mr. Finkelstein, I want to thank you so much for speaking with us. Now, you are also Jewish. You are the son of Holocaust survivors, yet you were denied entry into Israel on security grounds in 2008. What is your take on why Israel has chosen to deny entry to certain outspoken people such as yourself and Mr. Chomsky? What's really going on here?
Well, I think for the first time in a long time, Israel is being held to its own avowed standards. And being held to its own avowed standards, it's being exposed and now feels very threatened. So for a long time, Israel was saying it was waiting to see the emergence of a Palestinian Gandhi in the occupied Palestinian territories. But when the Palestinians start to demonstrate nonviolently and peacefully, and international volunteers came to support them as they protested nonviolently and peacefully, Israel began to expel the international supporters, and many Americans, including many American Jews, have now been denied entry into Israel and into the occupied territories because they support nonviolent protest. In the same way, Israel claims it's a Western nation ruled by law.
That's one thing
but
I want
to... all of your...
Sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to step on your tongue.
As all of your listeners know, recently the Goldstone Mission, headed by the South African Jew and Zionist Richard Goldstone, came out with a report, and he's a respected jurist, a respected legal mind, and he said that Israel committed war crimes and should be brought before the International Court of Justice. So once again, the values that Israel espouses are now being used to expose it. And so Israel feels very threatened by any criticism of its policy, mostly because the criticism, and they know it, is valid.
That's just a couple brief moments of the Norman Finkelstein interview with Russia Today, closing out our geopolitical updates. And on down the News Purge list, my friends, quickly, History Mystery shows that top secret Gorbachev files unveil globalist agenda. More on that from henrymaykow.com. But even the Telegraph gets into it. USSR planned nuclear attack on China in 1969. The Guardian getting into files revealing Britain's secret bioweapon trials in World War II. This, of course, involving Porton Down, the home and source of Foot and Mouth. Of course, all of these private military labs, whether it's Porton Down or Plum Island or Fort Detrick, they create the germs that then somehow accidentally escape during a drill or an exercise. And we do have a couple of updates on the murder of William Bennett. Of course, the former CIA contract agent who was beaten to death in Loudoun County last February. MediaMonarchy.com has been one of your main sources for following this story. YouTube playlist on YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy has massive information concerning this story. Capital murder charge moves toward grand jury and judge sentences Sterling Teen for assault and robbery. Both those stories from LoudounTimes.com. And on to the media memes. Filming Transformers 3 being filmed violates copyright, so says the studio. And an excellent article from JoeBadgent.com. Lost on the fearless plane, safely in the American national illusion. And our last media meme notes touch on a lot of different subjects. Again, most of these stories are all intimately all connected. Miss USA contestant, the runner-up, supported Arizona's illegal immigration law.
Oscar Nunez, your question, please.
Hello, Ms. Oklahoma. How are you?
I'm doing so great. Thank you.
All righty. Arizona's new immigration statute authorizes law enforcement authorities to check the citizenship of anyone they believe may be in the country illegally. Now, listen to the question before you boo. Critics say this may amount to racial profiling. Do you think that this should be mandated by the state or by the federal government?
I'm a huge believer in states' rights. I think that's what's so wonderful about America. So I think it's perfectly fine for Arizona to create that law. And I am against illegal immigration, but I'm also against racial profiling. So I see both sides in this issue. Thank you, Oklahoma.
Thank you very much.
Now, we've had a lot of recent controversies surrounding beauty pageants. And again, was this all a setup? You can go into that article. More on that from Kurt Nimmo. But we've got a few more things to go over on this massive news purge, my friends. Murder and mayhem. Three or four links, all concerning the same disturbing story. BlacklistedNews.com, the Associated Press, MSNBC, as well as CNN and other YouTube clips. Detroit cop kills 7-year-old child while executing a no-knock search warrant for the A&E TV show The First 48.
The bomb, the incendiary device, was thrown through the front plate glass window, either onto Ayanna or close enough to her to burn her severely. Ayanna's body was burned severely, and the family has asked me to have an autopsy conducted by Dr. Mark Spitz, Macomb County Medical Examiner, and that is taking place, I believe, today. Virtually simultaneously with a bomb being thrown through the window onto Ayanna, a shot is fired from outside on the porch into the home. The shot is unquestionably fired outside the home while the officer is standing on the porch. We know there's only one shot. It's vividly depicted in the videotape. It is virtually simultaneously, but right after the explosion of the bomb. And at that point, the officers rush into the home. You don't have to batter down that door because that door wasn't locked. So an examination of that door showed that the locks were intact. The casing was intact. The door frame was intact. Somebody simply opened the outside metal door, which was a metal screen, and kicked at the door, and it immediately opened. Ayanna was lying there lifeless. They grab her body virtually immediately and carry her out in a heart-rending fashion, like a rag doll. And the videotape displays her being carried out virtually immediately upon the officers entering the home. For 5 to 15 officers who know what happened, I'm asking that some of them have the ounce of the milk of human kindness to go forward to Chief Evans, go forward to your assistant chief, go forward to your internal affairs, and admit and tell them the truth about what happened. The officers huddled together in the van to try to come up with an explanation as to what happened. They decided that the explanation would be that the grandmother got into a altercation with them and the gun went off, which is absurd. It's not only absurd. When you finally see the video, what I'm so frightened about is that I don't want this city to explode. When you finally see this video, you will see that the explanation given to you is a complete and utter lie, and the shot was fired simultaneously with the device being thrown through the window. When they came up with that, then they arrested Mertilla. They took her in handcuffs from the scene to the jail. This investigation should have been over Sunday morning. You had 15 sworn officers, at least, on the scene who saw what happened. You have a videotape that you know about, which depicts what happened, and I hope that videotape does not disappear. Mayor Bing, you indicated that the madness had to stop. I agree. The madness has to stop. The slaughter in Detroit streets has to stop. And the people of the city of Detroit have got to believe that the police will protect them and not kill them. And when they do act in the fashion that we've described here, that they are held to justice in the same way as anyone else would be held to justice. Mayor Bing, Chief Evans, I'm asking you, on behalf of this family, I'm asking the officers who were present at the scene, come forward now and tell the truth. I saw the videotape. You all know what happened at this scene. Please don't let this child have died in vain. This is an opportunity to come together, not to tear us apart.
My friends, that disturbing story. Detroit cops killing a 7-year-old girl while filming an A&E television show. Again, speaks to the dangers that I think we're facing as we all basically huddle up further into our little gangs. The cops are going to do the same thing. So So let's hit the last two stories on this 520 news purge. Fall Hard, an interesting one, written by Dan Rather on Huffington Post. Pornland, Oregon. Child prostitution in Portland. Child prostitution has become a national problem in this country. Yes, I know you have trouble believing that. You don't want to believe it, so you tend not to. Widespread sex trafficking in children, you may be saying to yourself. Sure, it happens overseas in places like Thailand and Moldova, and while there may be some of it here, there's not much of it in our country. Based on a months-long investigation and some reportorial digging, I'm here to tell you that you're wrong. We all are. We're in denial. In covering news for more than 60 years, Dan Rather would like to think, that the news, or that the few stories shock me anymore. And as I bumble through this, we'll cut to the chase. To pick just one example among many, Portland, Oregon is without a doubt one of the nation's treasures. It's been voted one of the best places to live and work. But according to police, the city and its outlying communities have become a hub for the sexual exploitation of children. In a recent nationwide sting by federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, Portland ranked second in the country for the number of rescued child prostitutes. According to Doug Justice, the workhorse sergeant in charge of Portland's tiny vice detail, many of the children caught up in this are middle-class kids from the area. Again, right in my backyard. And again, we see how all these stories are intimately connected. Finally, sadly, our only war horrors note for the news purge from allgov.com. U.S. death toll in Afghanistan passes 1,000, and the rate is rising rapidly. American troops are dying faster and younger than ever in Afghanistan. The official death toll in the war for the United States recently passed 1,000 following a suicide bombing in Kabul that killed 5 service personnel. It took the U.S. almost 7 years to suffer its first 500 deaths in Afghanistan. The second 500 came in less than 2. In each of the first 5 months of 2010, the U.S. death toll is the highest for that month since the U.S. invaded Afghanistan more than 8.5 years ago. Now, of course, recently on Media Monarchy, we went over, of course, that the war in Afghanistan was planned up into a year in advance. And, of course, that the Taliban always said, if you show us evidence that Bin Laden was behind 9/11, we'll hand him over. But continuing, for example, the 20 Americans killed in April 2010 matched the combined total of Americans dead for the previous 4 Aprils combined. Because the deadliest months of fighting in Afghanistan tend to be June through October, Americans should brace themselves for even more reports of fatalities in the next few months. Also, the average of those killed has been dropping. The average age of those killed has been dropping from about 28 to 25. And on that grim note, my friends, as we take a second to think about that, and again, how not only are all these stories interconnected, but they're connected in a way that we could just say no, to bring up another important cliche of be your own leader and be the change you want to see in the world. We can take our money out of the banks. We can take our friends and family out of the war of terror war machine. So having said all that, let me remind you and tell you now we are well into hour number 2 of episode 171 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 21st, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.com. And of course, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, LaughlinRadio.com, all bringing you Media Monarchy Live, and of course, Free Radio Olympia, Berkeley Liberation Radio, One Sky Radio, on and on, the fine list of affiliates. live streaming and archived videos of the show in action on ustream.tv/mediamonarchy. And we still have so much to get into, my friends. And something we've discussed in not only the past few months, but especially the past few weeks, as it looked as though our latest update and the last time we reported on National Level Exercise 2010 was just last month, where the military canceled its involvement in this nuclear attack test, and at that point, National Level Exercise 2010 terror drills were in limbo. So you had military elements being pulled out of these drills that again center around a nuke going off in the heartland of America. National Level Exercise went off apparently without a hitch. May 17th and 18th, FEMA and DHS run National Level Exercise 2010, and we grab the press release from the horse's mouth, from FEMA.gov, by way of publicintelligence.net. Homeland Security's FEMA conducted National Level Exercise, engaging federal, state, and local partners in a series of events and opportunities to demonstrate and assess federal emergency preparedness capabilities pertaining to a simulated terrorist attack scenario involving an improvised nuclear device. This press release goes into a lot of acronyms and jargon, and it's connected as well to another drill called Eagle Horizon. Why do we pay attention to the drills? It's impossible to pay attention to every single drill, but as we've seen in the past in the MOs, that again, what I think a lot of this open source intelligence and new citizen journalists, activists, online media, alternative hosts, whatever you want to call it, whatever all of this is, it's hard to put a name on it when you're in the middle of it and you don't have any hindsight. Finding out some of the main tools of the insiders that they have used throughout the generations. And again, that's false flag events. Flying the flag of your enemy to do something bad so you can blame it on them and you gain political capital and the people are behind you. All the attacks through the years, Nero, the Nazis, Gulf of Tonkin, on and on and on and on. The drills became a way to somehow kickstart an event, turn a scenario into a live drill. And again, in these war games, you have good guys and bad guys, the red team, the people playing the bad guys. Do they always know what role they're playing? Do they always know who's funding their operations? How many layers are there? We watch movies about patsies and moles and government conspiracies all the time, but somehow don't want to believe it's real. Drills on 9/11, the exact same thing happened. Drills on 7/7, the exact same thing happened. We even recently learned that they were running exercises at the Gulf oil rig that won't stop spilling poison all over the Gulf Coast, still as we speak, weeks later. We watched the drills. We're going to get into all the rest of the drills. And you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it if I didn't tell you and if I didn't lay it out for you. And we talk about how we see these things play out in the media, but somehow never think it would happen in real life. When we dive into some of the sinister forces surrounding a lot of these things and these synchronicities, it only becomes more replete. So let's get into it. The rest of the terror drill updates, and we'll start it from ABC, the KGO station, as well as KansasCity.com. Sea lions and dolphin join terror exercises in California.
Special new agents were among the emergency responders who staged anti-terror drills around the bay and throughout the state today. Dolphins and sea lions are playing an important role in the exercises. ABC 7's Wayne Friedman joins us live from San Francisco tonight off the Embarcadero. Wayne, pretty impressive to watch them work.
Good evening, Dan. These drills took place on both sides of the bay. In Oakland today, agencies dealt with an imaginary toxic cloud from a ship. Over here in San Francisco, it was a different scenario. A terrorist planting a bomb beneath the pier, but instead of calling in the dogs, as you said, they called in the dolphins and the sea lions.
Had this been the real deal, we would not have been this close, nor would the mayor be observing from a San Francisco fireboat, or the Navy's media people be open and available for questions.
Theoretically, we say that we're able to do this in 72 hours for a real emergency.
In a world where terrorism has pretty much replaced nuclear annihilation as the threat du jour, this was a day of drills across California. In San Francisco Bay, the U.S. Navy used trained sea lions and dolphins to find a make-believe mine and saboteur beneath a pier near AT&T Park.
We zip the sea lion out in the boat. The sea lion jumps in the water, verifies, does an unequivocal discrimination that is a swimmer and nothing else. Comes back, gets the clamp, goes down, clamps it on. Just back the boat, gets out. They hand the line off to the other guys with the weapons, and that's it.
But it was hardly simple, according to Mike Roth, who manages the Navy's biosciences division. These dolphins and seals came up from San Diego, where the Navy has trained and used them for security and bomb detection since the Vietnam era. Dolphins have exceptionally sensitive high-frequency broadband sonar. They do the long-range work. Then the sea lions move in close. Their vision is five times better underwater than humans. Training takes about 4 years per animal, just in preparation.
We teach them to play games. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
But in fairness, the $20 million a year program has critics as well. In Berkeley, Mark Berman of Earth Island regards such training as immoral, unnatural, and cruel.
Other species are not to be fighting the wars of humans, period.
Or performing drills, he said.
The whole idea is not to play gotcha. The whole idea is to have problems and learn from those problems and fix them.
To that end, today's drill identified some non-working emergency cell phone numbers.
So we're going to update the notification list.
Better to find out now than during the real thing.
These drills will continue for two more days, but the responders have no idea what will come next. That's the point, to find the flaws and then fix them. From San Francisco, Wayne Friedman, ABC 7 News.
The Day of the Dolphin was a 1973 American science fiction thriller directed by Mike Nichols and starring George C. Scott. A brilliant and driven scientist and his young and beautiful wife train dolphins to communicate with humans. Two of his dolphins are stolen by officials of the shadowy Franklin Foundation, headed by Harold DiMilo, the supportive backer of the Terrell's research. After the dolphins are kidnapped, an investigation by an undercover government agent for hire reveals that the Institute is planning to further train the dolphins to carry out a political assassination using a limpet mine against the yacht of the President of the United States. This film from 1973, directed by Mike Nichols, was originally to be directed by Roman Polanski. He was scouting locations when the Manson family and all of these sinister connections and sinister forces murdered his wife, Sharon Tate. San Francisco Guardian goes over terror attack response exercises at California ports. KFSN goes into emergency personnel holding full-scale terror drill around the San Francisco Bay Area.
Emergency responders are taking part in anti-terror drills around the bay and throughout the state today.
Securing our ports is the focus, and the efforts will include dolphins and sea lions. ABC 7's Terry McSweeney is live at the Oakland Emergency Operations Center to show us what's happening. Terry?
Yeah, this is the governor's Golden Guardian exercise, the sixth annual. 3,000 people participating from all levels of government as well as the private sector preparing for a terrorist attack at one of our ports. Take a look inside the Emergency Operations Center here in Oakland. The scenario here today, There has been a terrorist attack on a container ship in the port of Oakland. There is a fire on board. A toxic cloud has formed and is floating towards downtown Oakland. An evacuation has been ordered. The Coast Guard, Oakland Fire and Police, Alameda County Sheriff's Department, the Port of Oakland, and other agencies training together today should that tragedy strike.
And the main purpose of the exercise is for us to figure out all the things we don't know and find out why our communications don't work if they don't work, why none of us know what to do if we don't, and hopefully to figure out who really does know what we do know.
The scenario in San Francisco, where they'll be doing their own separate operation about 30 minutes from right now, will show off the Navy Marine Mammal Program. Dolphins will be tracking an underwater terrorist and indicate his location with a marker to let the good guys know where the bad guy is. Also, a sea lion's going to be there carrying a leg cuff tied to a rope in its mouth. And it's going to clamp that cuff on the terrorist's leg so authorities can pull him ashore. It is truly amazing stuff, but it's not really new. It has been used by the military for their purposes for years. Now it is being incorporated in the homeland security field. Live in Oakland, Terry McSweeney, ABC 7 News.
Now we see art imitating life, imitating politics, imitating the movies, imitating the military-industrial complex. And there are more terror drills and more drills. Pentagon and police stage terror attack exercise in Long Beach. Terror in Redwood City. Emergency drill prepares for terrorist attack. That's from smdailyjournal.com. Vacaville, California police train with the DHS. That's the Department of Homeland Stupidity. In a little crowd management exercise. Again, what are they preparing for? New York Air National Guard unit participates in air defense exercise. Police officers use Illinois college campus for an active shooter scenario. That's from McDonoughVoice.com. New Jersey gunman drill aims to neutralize threats. That's from Shore News Today. And Natick Labs in Massachusetts practices real-time response to fake terror attack. That's from MetroWestDailyNews.com. Drills acclimate both parties. They acclimate the private, military, pharmaceutical, enforcement, contractor, armies to laying out this kind of enforcement in the United States. And it gets the cattle used to seeing the military performing law enforcement duties. Now that Posse Comitatus is out the window and terrorists are everywhere, as we just heard in the clip, terrorism is now the main game, the main scare. And as the econo crash continues, we're going to see things turn more into the snitch state, the nanny state, as there are less and less jobs. They'll give you a job being a snitch for the state. Whether that's someone not recycling correctly or just looking suspicious or perhaps driving while black. Anything. All crime is terror. Section 802 of the Patriot Act. All these things still continuing under Obama, continuing the State of Emergency Act. It rolls on and on. This didn't start with Obama. This didn't start with Bush. This didn't start with Clinton, and on and on and on. We get the front men out to sell the sheeple and the cattle. To use derogatory terms I don't like to use, I want to be more positive, and that's what this is all about. Empowering you with open source intelligence and information. We're going to see corrupt people more and more worming their way into positions of little fake, low-level, wise guy, boss hog-style power. And I reference Soylent Green a lot. It's not the greatest film in the world, but there's a lot of important elements in there. Charlton Heston is a corrupt agent for the man investigating things with a tough-ass attitude and taking the little bits of things that people have squirreled away in their apartments and they can't do anything about it because he's got the blue helmet on. So this brings us to police state updates, tattle on the cattle, a line I stole from The Simpsons. And it starts off all disgustingly enough from NBCNewYork.com. TSA agent steals cash from wheelchair-bound woman. But good news, coming from CBS, noting that the TSA's behavior detection system, actually I think they ask it as a question, but I just lay it out as a statement. The TSA's behavior detection program is a $200 million sham. As we see, again, the rampant corruption, and it is trickle down, if we can use that analogy, the trickle down corruption is what we have. Citizen journalist Sam Dodson and Detroit TSA Security Theater.
So what's next? Couldn't you guys catch some real criminals? Maybe? No? I know they're hard to catch. It's much easier to just harass journalists, condition the public, eventually put the body scanners in so you guys can save off images of naked children, share those around the department. Don't you think there's anything wrong with that? You know, one of the police officers told me once you go through security that he owns everybody in here. Do you think it's right to own another human being? Because that's what the police told me. They owned me. Nothing to say, huh? How long you been with the TSA? Have a nice day.
I'm Sam Dodson. You're watching OTN.
Local 4 defender Kevin Dietz is live tonight with the videotape that shows it all.
That's right. Anyone with a camera and a computer can call themselves a journalist, and they tell their story on the internet. Well, these vigilante journalists made their way to Metro Airport, and it was just days after that extremely scary event at Metro Airport.
These guys are ridiculous. They couldn't find the business end of a pencil, much less a terrorist.
They call themselves vigilante journalists. With their cell phone and hidden video cameras, they travel the country attempting to expose government agencies. And just weeks after the attempted bombing of Flight 253 above Metro Detroit, they were pushing the limits of the law and testing already frazzled federal agents while filming at Metro Airport. His name is Sam Dodson. While security was still on high alert after arresting Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, he was taunting the TSA on tape. He pushed it right up to the legal limit.
The bottom line is we're going to get ID from you now or they lock up. Which do you want?
They were not arrested at Metro Airport, but it certainly caused for some tense moments at Metro Airport at a very scary time.
Yeah.
We don't call ourselves a vigilante journalist. That's the name they want to call us. Anybody with a camera and internet connection can call themselves a journalist. So, still propping up the TSA and all their war of terror, official 9/11 conspiracy theory, and let's not forget the shoe bombers and the underwear bombers and all these other trumped up patsy cases that have the intelligence fingerprints of MI5 and MI6 and the ISI and the CIA. They're also propping up themselves to say, we're the real media. We're your corporate TV news. Trust us. Trust a model reading a press release from the government. Quickly on down the ugly list from Federal Computer Week, FBI official John Pistole picked to head the TSA now. This would be the third attempt to get ahead of the post-9/11 corrupt TSA. Spy agencies faulted it for missing the Christmas Day bomber, Mutallab. That's from the Washington Post. And again, did this lead to Dennis Blair falling on a sword? More on that in just a few minutes. Pakistan arrests Army officer linked to Faisal Shahzad. And, of course, Veterans Today, Gordon Duff getting into the Shahzad CIA false flag against Pakistan. Napolitano urged to cut DHS ties with Arizona. New terror monitors? Parking attendants, my friend. We can get stories from MSNBC as well as KTNV, Arizona recruits meter maids in the phony war of terror.
In light of the recent attempt to set off a bomb in New York's Times Square, extra eyes are keeping watch over possible terrorist targets. A national program is training parking attendants to watch for suspicious people, and it's even happening right here in Las Vegas. Marco Villarreal shows us how our city is on the cutting edge.
Las Vegas, one of the hottest tourist spots in the world, makes one wonder if what happened in New York could happen here.
Would you want to come someplace where their terrorists are setting out bombs?
A new government program plans to train parking attendants and meter maids to watch and report anything suspicious.
Education is the biggest thing, educating the public, our private partners, and also our law enforcement.
That's why some big names are getting together to bring room attendants, valet, and bellmen up to speed on what to look for.
We show you certain things that would be suspicious out of the ordinary that might not seem like a big deal. Someone parking a car and leaving in the wrong direction. The car is all tinted with things in the back, or maybe has a funky smell like fertilizer.
So why have parking attendants and other hospitality workers watching out for terrorist activity? Well, security experts say the more eyes, the better.
I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a pretty good idea.
I think anything they can do to make the city safe for the tourists is definitely a bonus for us.
This program that's going to be put in place by the federal government here, do you think we're steps ahead of what the federal government or even other states are doing regarding safety?
I think the things that are going on here are cutting edge.
Now, it's very important that all of us are always attentive and report suspicious behavior so that Vegas can continue to be the safe destination it is for us and visitors. Now, we do have safety information on our website, ktnv.com. Just click on the Action News link in the big blue box. Live in the newsroom, Marco Villarreal, Channel 13, Action News.
But this is the real Action News live on praradio.org. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Data mining from the corporate media, putting it into the proper context and giving you the subtext of what's really going down. Further down, cruise industry security will tighten. Canadian fighter jets escort a Cathay Pacific plane from Hong Kong into Vancouver. NORAD says U.S. jets intercept ultralight plane from Mexico. Man with box cutters arrested trying to board a plane. That's from the L.A. Times. Hazardous material scare shuts down Liberty Bell Pavilion. Vermont farmer draws a line at U.S. bid to bolster border. More on that from the Boston Globe. United Nations convoy sighted in Pennsylvania? More on that from ResistNet.com. UC Berkeley asking incoming students for DNA. More on that from KTVU.com. Photos reveal inside look at East Austin Tunnel home. Some series of tunnels. Again, preparing for the econo crash. An excellent report from Peter Dale Scott, supplanting the U.S. Constitution, war, national emergency, and the continuity of government. Again, these drills are not new. The groundwork has been laid. They're just rolling it all out into place and are slowly announcing it to all of us, slowly turning up the heat on the frog. We'll end on a good note on these police state updates. UK to kill national ID card program. More on that from Computer World. And again, as we always note in those kind of situations, even when we get some kind of pushback or some kind of a little bit of relief against the ever-encroaching police state, when states or organizations or countries bristle against Big Brother, it's usually from the wallet. But sometimes we've got to take the victories any way that we can. So, speaking of your wallet, let's get to the latest Obamessiah and the Apostles of War updates. Goldman Sachs from top to bottom, Obama's change, owned and operated by the great vampire squid. Two articles on the FDL website, Fire Dog Lake, detail the intimate and incestuous relationship between the Barry Obama administration and Goldman Sachs. FDL names names and provides expansive detail on the Goldie administration. At a time when congressional hearings were set to call testimony from some Goldman Sachs employees, it's vital to understand how widespread that institution's ties are to the Obama administration. These diaries and documentations show the pervasive influence of Goldman and Goldman-created institutions like the Hamilton Project, embedded in the Brookings Institution, employees and influence peddlers in the Obama administration. It's not simply Larry Summers, Timothy Geithner, Rahm Emanuel, Gary Gensler, and Mark Patterson who are Goldies, but a long list of others, and it's just the tip of the Goldman iceberg. Within this, you'll find probably the most comprehensive list of people groups yet available to show how Obama's administration has really become the Goldman Sachs administration. And Elena Kagan is merely the latest addition, although her ties to Goldman are downplayed, if not completely ignored, by the corporate media. We, of course, reported that to you extensively on MediaMonarchy.com. Goldman, now strategically placed in the White House as the greatest depression inexplicably unfolds all around us, the banksters are positioned to emerge as rulers of us all, and most of us, thanks to the corporate media, are completely unaware. The links to these massive, and I believe being updated articles, a list of Goldman Sachs people in the Obama government, names attached to the giant squid's tentacles, and the updated list of Goldie ties to Obama government, including Kagan, all linked up for you. And now it pains me to say, and this got a lot of coverage, and again, this is the fake culture wars, and this is again why you need to be your own leader. Woody Allen says Obama should become a dictator. I believe this was a Spanish language interview. It's now making the rounds. Basically, George Bush got his way, so they should just step aside and let Obama do his thing. Now we have attached the still from Woody in his early film Bananas, where he plays the dictator of a banana republic, as we're turning into a banana republic that won't have any bananas. This is why it's important to separate the art from the man in a lot of cases. I love his films, and we can leave it there. Indiana Representative Mark Souter resigns after an affair with a staffer, and apparently it was a woman. O'Reilly calls Kagan's brother a left-wing radical. And another good note, speaking of the Supreme Court, they at least banned life in prison for juvenile non-murderers. And Obama had the president over, of course, noting, quote, "We are not defined by our borders." And again, if the agenda rolls out, we won't have any borders. It'll be a part of the North American community. Robert Pastor and the Council on Foreign Relations talk about SPP, Security and Prosperity Partnership, SPP.gov. They'll tell you the roads and the infrastructures aren't being built and put into place, but you see it everywhere. Rich and powerful, Obama and the global super elite. More on that from The Independent. Perhaps we could have put that in our stories about Geithner and Brzezinski and the Bilderbergs and the Trilaterals and the CFR. But again, it's all connected. Obama may personally greet each graduate at Kalamazoo Central. This from MLive.com out of Michigan. Kalamazoo Central seniors to fill out paperwork for Secret Service. You got to make sure all your documentation is there and maybe your birth certificate is there so you can shake the president's hand. And if, as if all that wasn't funny enough, recently Obama signed the Press Freedom Act. And we've got stories and videos from InfoWars and the New York Times where Obama turns his back on the press and won't talk to them after signing the Press Freedom Act.
So we are very grateful to them. I'm grateful to the legislative leaders who helped pass this. It is something that I intend to make sure our State Department carries out with vigor. And with that, I'm going to sign the bill. There you go. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're certainly free to pass it. We won't be answering. I'm not going to press comments today, but we'll see you guys during the course of this week.
And he hasn't done a press conference in months. National Intelligence, quote-unquote, Director Dennis Blair resigns. He of the "we can assassinate American citizens abroad if we suspect, you know, they're terrorists." More on that from the Washington Post and Fox. But from The Guardian, Obama hails a vote on tightening regulations of Wall Street banks. That's what we are noting at the top of Google News right now. It's reform. The junkie needed another fix. But again, the fix has to be bigger and bigger each time to get the oligarch money junkies and the banksters just back to that high normal. Obama starts deploying interrogation teams. That's from Reuters, and of course, that's just overseas for right now. We're not doing that here. It's not meant for you. The last interesting note from weeklyblitz.net. Harlem pastor Reverend James Manning has been putting Obama on trial this week for his connections to the CIA, his shady connections to Colombia, CIA fronts in BIC. But we have to move quickly now, my friends, as we're running out of time and we may not be able to get to everything. But again, as always, I'll just mention that all these things are documented and laid out on the website, laying out the path. So let's move into the latest BioWars Enviro Health updates. Gulf oil, God's work, and shocking conditions. Just like 9/11, oil spill, first responders getting sick but are being told they don't need any safety gear. That's from Washington's blog. The Gulf gush is 10 times worse than estimated. That's from Raw Story. Criminal negligence. Despite knowing it had a damaged blowout preventer, BP still cut corners by removing single most important safety measure. Again, from Washington. Blog. But that's not all. Coast Guard threatens CBS News with arrest for filming the poison spill.
This wasn't just Sheen. We were seeing heavy oil out there. This wasn't just tar balls. It shows you how quickly that oil showed up.
This video was shot by the local parish government in South Pass. When we tried to reach the beach, seen here and covered in oil, a boat of BP contractors with two Coast Guard officers on board told us to turn around under threat of arrest.
This is not out.
We spoke to Coast Guard officials today. They say they're looking into it. Katie?
And Kelly, what has been the impact on wildlife so far?
Government officials say that 162 sea turtles have died, about half a dozen bottlenose dolphins have died. The sea turtles have not been thoroughly examined yet, but federal officials say this seems related to the oil spill.
Oh, sure, it all seems related to the oil spill, and we'll also note an additional dolphin reference there thrown in. Media ignores Goldman Sachs' ties to the Corexit dispersant spraying chemicals on the oil. That's from PicassoDreams.com. And back to the eugenicists. Ted Turner suggests the Gulf oil spill just might be God's work.
And you say get rid of coal, get rid of oil.
Phrase them out.
And do it now.
Do it. It'll take a few years to do, but do it as quickly as possible with the same enthusiasm and hard work that we did to get to the moon. It's just as important, if not more important, than getting to the moon.
Talking about the ongoing oil spill, spilling thousands and thousands of gallons
millions.
Into the Gulf of Mexico right now, could be millions. How does that make this debate even more immediate? I mean, you look, they cannot plug the hole. It's been over 20 days. We're trying to send, you know, people to Mars, and we can't plug the hole.
Sad. It's sad. I'm not a real religious person, but I'm somewhat religious. And I'm just wondering if God telling us he doesn't want us to drill offshore, because it sure is setting back offshore drilling. And right before that, we had that coal mine disaster in West Virginia where we lost 29 miners. And last week or 2 days ago, the Chinese lost 29 miners too in another mine disaster over in China. There seems like there's one over there every week. And maybe that, you know, the Lord's tired of having the mountains of West Virginia, the tops knocked off of them so they can get more coal. I think maybe we ought to just leave the coal in the ground and go with solar and wind power and geothermal where it's applicable.
Well, possibly God's working away.
Well, it could be. He's sending us a message.
Talk to us about, I mean, you support nuclear energy.
I like wind and solar better, but I'd sure rather see a nuclear plant than I would a coal burning plant.
Why?
Because it's cleaner.
It is cleaner.
Even with coal, you know you're going to get killed, and with nuclear, you have a chance of getting killed. But at least you have a chance of not getting killed either.
Most people don't say it that way. That's an interesting way.
Well, that's the way I see it.
That's the way you say it.
Give me nuclear over coal.
FDA says vaccine with pig virus DNA is A-okay for humans. That's from Reuters. Suggestion for pre-pandemic vaccine ignites debate. Major international bridge, Ontario's Rainbow Bridge, used in terror attack simulation. New York midwives lose their right to deliver babies at home. Shocking conditions at Tylenol plant. And the Gates Foundation funds researchers investigating ultrasound to halt sperm production. Gates involved in sterilization and vaccinations all around the world. We don't have time to get into it. Mustard agent vapor detected at Army Chemical Depot in Oregon. Again, this is the second event involving the Umatilla Chemical Depot in eastern Oregon. More on that from bioprepwatch.com. Is Obama's cancer choice, Harold Varmus, too close to the drug industry? More on that from allgov.com. Always going into the new appointments. University professor barred from lab over unauthorized bioterror agent experiments, anthrax hoax at New York City department store, and, which again would be a huge story, scientists create synthetic life form, artificial life breakthrough announced by scientists. More on that from the BBC and The Guardian. It is a huge story, but again, we're up against a mountain of huge and important stories. Plum Island, the site of animal disease lab and the probable source of Lyme disease, may be sold. More on that, of course, on the origins of Lyme disease from Lab 257, the book. But we'll close out the BioWars EnviroHealth updates with an interesting report from, and I don't exactly know which station this came from, but this is out of a Southern Oregon news station. And in watching it, the weatherman almost seems kind of nervous. Like he knew that he was going to say something he maybe shouldn't. Weatherman admits military spraying chemicals in the sky.
You can see scattered showers still showing up on the Pacific Northwest radar throughout the region. The heaviest, and of course, well to our north here in Southern Oregon and Northern California. We've got a bit of an unusual situation. Now, this first portion of the radar cycle, fairly bland and typical. But then you see these bands of very distinct cloud cover moving into the region. That is not rain. That is not snow. Believe it or not, military aircraft flying through the region is dropping chaff. Small bits of aluminum, sometimes it's made of plastic or metallicized paper products, but it's used as an anti-radar issue, and obviously they're up there practicing. Now, they won't confirm that, but I was in the Marine Corps for many years, and I'll tell you right now that's what it is. 50 in Medford right now, 48 in Yreka, 42 in Klamath Falls.
Now, you can run defense for this and saying, oh, he didn't say chemicals, he said it's paper for military. But again, This is just another example of geoengineering the atmosphere, spraying chemicals, and it all, again, ties into, ultimately, the eugenics agenda. What so much of this does. Now, for the last 10 minutes here, we've got a few important things to mention of an upcoming event about my man, Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org. But what we want to do is take a look into the important story surrounding the Oklahoma City bombing and the murder of Sergeant Terrence Yakey. Now, this is someone you may have never have heard of. Sergeant Terrence Yakey, Y-E-A-K-E-Y. And we're getting this story and this short film from We Are Change Oklahoma that asks, what did Sergeant Terrence Yakey know? This short film will give you a glimpse into the mystery of the brutal torture murder of Sergeant Terrence Yakey and address several of the unanswered questions that exist surrounding the horrific circumstances of his passing on May 8, 1996. Sergeant Yakey is remembered as a loving husband, father, brother, and son, and highly respected seven-year veteran of the Oklahoma City Police Department. So from We Are Change Oklahoma, this is the OKC bombing and the murder of Sergeant Terrence Yakey.
This short film will give you a glimpse into the mystery of the brutal torture murder of Sergeant Terrence Yakey and address several of the unanswered questions that exist surrounding the horrific circumstances of his passing on May 8, 1996. Sergeant Yakey is remembered as a loving husband, father, brother, and son, and highly respected seven-year veteran of the Oklahoma City Police Department.
He was an awesome older brother. We used to hang out and do fun things together, and he just was always about fun, but he also was about his work, too, and he was very serious about being a cop.
We're on location at the Oklahoma City National Memorial on the west side, 30 yards away from the west wall, which marks the spot where Officer Terrence Yakey, sergeant with the Oklahoma City Police Department, pulled up in his black and white squad car less than 10 minutes after the multiple explosions emanated from the AP Murrah building on the morning of April 19, 1995. Mr. Yakey would pull out eight survivors that day, the first being Mr. Tom Hall, a GSA employee, and set them less than 20 yards to my right, going back for seven other survivors. He worked tirelessly over 3.5 hours. The fact that Officer Yakey was able to approach the crime scene in such a quick manner without protective breathing gear, as was the case with several other civilians coming from surrounding businesses and other search and rescue personnel, clearly shows that ammonium nitrate and fuel oil was not used as a principal agent explosive to take apart the AP Murrah building. If ANFO was used, there would have been a heavy cloud of nitric gas hanging over the area, and all of the search and rescue people, including Sergeant Yakey, would have been buckling over, becoming violently ill. That simply did not happen. So that calls into question what actually blew up the AP Murrah building. Sergeant Yakey had witnessed things during his response to the bombing, which did not agree with the official version of events touted by the national media and law enforcement at that time. He was in the process of collecting evidence which supported and documented the inconsistencies he witnessed the morning of the bombing at the scene itself. According to the Yakey family members, Terrence Yakey was to meet a colleague in the restaurant directly behind me the morning of May 8 of 1996. He was to discuss records that he had collected regarding the Oklahoma City bombing, which were stored in a storage facility about an hour's drive north of here. Terrence Yakey never made it to that restaurant in El Reno because on the morning of May 8 of 1996 at 7 a.m., his vehicle was found in a spot just behind me by a resident living up this road no more than a mile away. It was from 7 a.m. until 6 p.m. that the car would sit here, full of blood, and according to Terry's sister Vicky, there was actually blood in between the window panes in the back of the vehicle. In addition to the blood, there was an unidentified knife found in the bottom of the glove box, along with razor blades, the car keys, and the windows rolled up tight. The car was locked. Terry's body was nowhere to be found. Until later that evening, between 7 and 8 p.m., OCPD helicopters, in addition to the Canadian County Sheriff, as well as El Reno Police, would have a large search party looking for Terry's body no more than a half a mile from where we're standing. It is important to note exactly how Yakey is supposed to have killed himself. He was said to have slit his wrists and neck, causing him to nearly bleed to death in his car and then miraculously climb over a barbed wire fence. He then was reported to have walked over 1.25 mile distance through a nearby field, eventually shooting himself in the head at an unusual angle. Startlingly, no weapon was found at the scene of the body. No investigation was conducted, no fingerprints taken, and no interviews with family members or friends were conducted to try and determine why Yeki would have been suicidal, or if he had in fact been suicidal at all. Instead, the conclusion that Yeki's death was a suicide was reached immediately without an autopsy. Far from being suicidal, Sergeant Yeki was in the process of achieving some major life goals. He was scheduled to be interviewed a final time with the FBI in Irving, Texas. He was planning on working for the FBI in Dallas and moving there with his sister and brother-in-law. Furthermore, Sergeant Yeki, a Gulf War I veteran who had served as an MP for 2 years in Saudi Arabia, was also a 7-year veteran of the OCPD and had just been promoted to sergeant in November of 1995. Several weeks before his death, he had been awarded the key to the city of El Reno, Oklahoma, for his heroism during the aftermath of the Oklahoma City bombing. Additionally, Yeki had reconciled with his ex-wife, and plans were set to remarry her shortly after his move to Dallas, Texas. Despite all of this, Yeki was living under constant scrutiny for his refusal to go along with official versions of the events during and after the Oklahoma City bombing. And because of his refusal to change his story about what he saw that fateful day, he was the target of horrific persecution from his brothers in law enforcement, up to and including Oklahoma City Police Department Chief Sam Gonzalez, his commanding officer, Lieutenant John Randall, and alleged good friend, Jim Ramsey, and several others on the force at the time. Although he was looking forward to his new job with the FBI, Yeki was described by his family as a man who was also living in great fear at this time and who was preoccupied with the harassment he was being subjected to on a daily basis. When Yeki showed up at his older sister's home the evening before his alleged suicide, he was physically ill. When she attempted to take him to the emergency room, Yeki would not allow this because he told her, "They can find me there." Yeki never told her who they were in an attempt to protect her.
The OKC bombing and the mysterious murder of Sergeant Terrence Yeki, just another thread in all of these interweaving tales that I can't properly summarize for you here at the end of the show. What we quickly want to mention are the couple latest episodes of Outside the Box from Alex Ansary from right here in Portland, Oregon, broadcast on Portland Community Media. Episodes 250 and 251, talking to a Libertarian candidate for the Oregon Senate, MarkDelphine.com. And in episode 251, Alex talks to Tom Horn about transhumanism and the potential future of the human race and all that that entails. Latest episode from Clyde Lewis, live on KUFO, right here in Portland. Archives available, ZeroPointRadio.com. Twisted Tales of the B-Movie Apocalypse, the article, and the most recent episode provided, and at the bottom of this posting. And what we want to remind you here about at the end of this show is Clyde Lewis's AC/DC God show tomorrow night in Portland, Oregon at the Kenton Masonic Lodge. Going into eschatology and the Antichrist. It's going to be a good time. I'm excited to go. You can get all the info from groundzeromedia.org as well as zeropointradio.com if you can't be there. Go to zeropointradio.com to figure out how you can listen live. And again, Media Monarchy will be there on the scene. I missed it last week, so we'll get last week's and this week's creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past 2 weeks, going from the oldest, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department out of Austin, NASA out of Lanham, Maryland, Googling about the birth control pill, Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, U.S. Courts out of D.C., they Googled Ira Einhorn, the Navy Network Information Center out of Jacksonville, North Carolina, and the Bowling Air Force Library Services out of Washington, D.C. Then this last week, we had Honeywell International out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Google Media Monarchy. The National Library of Medicine out of Potomac, Maryland, was reading about doctor admitting to euthanizing patients during Katrina. That story we covered last year on MediaMonarchy.com. Foundation for Community Empowerment, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the National Institute of Nuclear Physics, and some garbled list of U.S. government GSA, LSA, Reg 9. Creepy customers indeed. It's interesting to see who visits your website when you deal in open source intelligence. And again, that's what this is all about. It's all open source, fair use, not breaking any laws. Alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, all for you here on MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Nexus video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news clips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not or not with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.